a bloated hot water heater, and home networking up next on the Handy Guys Podcast.
Welcome to the Handy Guys Podcast, where we work together on that honey-do list. Here are the Handy Guys themselves, Brian and Paul.
All right, Brian. So in this episode, we're going to talk about two major topics. One is regarding the cold water heater, where some people call it the hot water heater.
Right.
We got a listener question. And I'm also going to want to chat a little bit about home networking. I know as handy guys, you know, typically the handy guy just needs a wrench, a hammer, maybe some screwdrivers, and you can tackle the chores around the house. But
right.
You really need to understand the technology in the home. I mean, what's a handy guy?
All the high-tech stuff. You know, there's more and more of it these days.
Absolutely. I mean, what's a handy guy that can't hook up a telephone, for instance? And so we're going to take that a step further and have sort of a segment where we introduce the basics of home networking. And I want to talk a little bit about, and it's not networking with your family, but about networking your computers and specifically wired versus wireless, pros and cons, and what it all means.
Right. And we can tie that into some of the new stuff that the handy guys might have.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, we'll cover those topics right after we give out this contact information.
All right. You can always visit us at our website, www.handyguyspodcast.com. Fill out the contact form and we will get back to you. Also, there's a call me button right on the homepage. You could use that as well.
It's time for listener questions with the Handy Guys.
Okay, Brian, we got a comment on one of our previous posts on hot water heaters. What episode was that?
Episode number 13.
Right.
We called it the cold water heater.
Yeah, there you go. And it was from Sandra, and she has an interesting problem with her cold water heater. Why don't you tell us about it?
Okay, she said, my hot water heater bowed at the bottom of the tank and forced the tank upward, which caused the pipes to leak. Could you tell me what would cause this?
Well, that's an interesting one, Brian. My immediate thought was that she's left her home empty for a month or so, and you know, the cold air just froze the tank. And like a Coke can, you put a Coke can in a freezer, it's going to bow out the bottom and the top.
Right.
And expand.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's what happened. I think there was obviously there was excessive pressure in the tank. And what would have caused that?
Well, I know your hot water heater should have an expansion tank above it because that allows for the expansion of the water in your water system, and I think it helps prevent pipe leaks, potential leaks, and that sort of thing.
Right, but that's normal expansion just from you know normal temperature changes in the water and as use changes on demand in the house, right? More people drawing water, less people. That's not to prevent significant increases in pressure. And there's also a safety device on these water heaters, Paul, that we talked about back in episode 13. It's called the TNP valve,
sure.
Temperature and pressure valve. Mm-hmm. So the temperature increases too much or the pressure increases too much, and that valve will open to release that that water.
See, I'd always wondered why, when we talked about that back in the episode, you have this valve that basically shoots water out if you have too much pressure, which I always thought, well, that's fine and dandy. Now you've just flooded my basement and wrecked my carpets. Why don't you just, you know, hold that pressure inside? And so we thought, well, it could explode or something like that, but maybe what it just does is bow the bottom.
And Paul, you don't watch Mythbusters very much, do you?
Yeah, here and there. Did they test this?
They did test this on Mythbusters.
What did they do?
They defeated a TNP valve,
okay,
and increased the temperature of the water to 360 degrees in the tank,
right,
and were able to launch a water heater through a 2.5-story house and another 100+ feet into the air.
So, in other words, there was no relief valve on this system. They heated the water up, got too hot, and the thing just
exploded and launched through the house, through the floors, through the roof,
like a balloon,
and up
or
into
something.
The air, like a rocket.
Yeah, interesting.
It was incredible.
Well, actually, yeah, if it exploded in the right direction, maybe like out the back wall, that might be less damage than all the water.
Right, but apparently these water heaters will fail from the bottom.
Right, so you obviously don't want this thing launching through your house.
Correct. So Sandra, it's definitely time for a new water heater, yeah, okay. First of all.
So it's the TMP valve is a good thing. So the question, though, is?
The TMP valve was either not installed
right.
or faulty.
Okay.
Okay. But what caused the pressure, right? So we know the safety yeah. valve failed. So what might have caused that? It might have been caused by an improper or a faulty thermostat.
So it just kept overheating the water,
okay. right? So too much water. And the other thing I was thinking, maybe in conjunction with that, is in an episode a couple of weeks ago, we talked about high water pressure.
Right.
Right, and checking your water pressure and so forth. So it was possibly a combination of factors where you had high water pressure to begin with, and then you add to that excessive heat and also probably not using it for a period of time as well contributed because, if you're using it every day, that water gets replenished, it cools down, it gets warm, cools down, gets warm. So that maybe didn't occur, and that water just kept boiling and boiling and boiling, getting hotter and hotter.
Interesting.
And hence the tank.
So you want to make sure you have a TNP valve. There's no way to know if it's going to work, though, of course.
No, and those TNP valves, I've seen them go bad, but usually go bad in the opposite way, where they'll start leaking
right.
And releasing water when there isn't excessive pressure.
Well, how would you know?
Well, you'd see it leaking.
I know, but how do you know that it's not because you have some pressure?
That's a good
maybe,
point.
Yeah. Maybe it is working. You know,
maybe it is doing its job, right?
I don't know. Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. So make sure you have that TMP valve. Usually, if it's done right, you have a tube coming off of it and going straight down parallel to your tank down to the floor. So if the water shoots out and it could be blazing hot water, it's not shooting up in the air in right. your face or something like that.
Right.
If anyone's near it. So you want to make sure you have one of those valves on your cold water heater. And in this case, it looks like you need a new tank.
Yeah. Sandra, you need a new water heater. Absolutely. So.
Okay. Well, up next, we're going to talk about the handy guy and home networking.
Great.
Want great deals on tools that the handy guys recommend? Click on the Our Store button at www.handyguyspodcast.com.
Okay, Brian, so all the rage these days I've noticed as someone who's involved in technology is that every home device for the most part that comes out anymore, whether it be, you know, a network-attached hard drive, a laptop, a computer,
printers.
A TV gizmo, a printer, they almost all have wireless networking capability. They also have wired for the most part.
They do.
And they have a little Ethernet jack in the back, which is just an RJ45 jack, which is just looks like a large phone jack if you're comfortable with that.
Right.
So it's double the size of a typical phone jack. So they have both. And the easy method to, apparently, seemingly easy method to make connections with these devices is to use the wireless because a lot of people don't have the wiring in their house, right, to run a wired network. So I want to talk about the pros and cons of the wired internet or networking versus wireless, and maybe at some future date we'll do a show on how you can wire your house and fish wire and that sort of thing.
Okay.
So let's just talk about the wireless. Typically, most people are using 802.11. It's called 802.11 wireless technology. Usually,
Paul, all this tech. Geek speak, right?
Yeah, it's all tech geek, but that's what they're using. If you go out and buy a wireless router, which is what you need to make those connections, you're using 802.11b or G typically, or the latest is 802.11n. And the advantages of the wireless we've already talked about, if it's working, it's real easy to set up. The downsides are that you have to be in range. So if you
right.
have if you have a big house or you have some masonry walls or other things that are better at blocking the wireless, then you could have some connectivity problems. The other issue is that if you live in a neighborhood, especially newer neighborhoods with younger families, everyone has their own wireless router and you get them all competing. There's only 11 channels, I believe it is, in a typical wireless router. So
right.
if you haven't changed your default channel and you're all talking over each other, there's a lot of chances of disconnects And you also have to worry about security. You got to make sure these things are secured. Mm-hmm. And that creates another layer of potential, you know, problems. Just getting your machines to connect to it, getting your set-top box to connect to it, and that sort of thing. So wireless, while it seems easy, it isn't always so easy. The other thing is that if you have an 802.11b or G router, then you're talking at a 2.4 gigahertz frequency, which is the same as a lot of home wireless phones.
Yes, it is.
And a lot of people are using the older wireless phones at the same frequency. We used to have a set in the house. We always had problems with wireless until we got rid of the phones and use now the newer technology, which is called DECT. Digital wireless technology for phones, and that uses a different frequency. The other thing is microwaves also cause noise on the 2.4 gigahertz frequency. So wireless works, but it can be problematic, you know, because there's just so much traffic and pollution out in the wireless airwaves.
Yeah, there definitely is. And, you know, my latest wireless device to connect up was a wireless printer.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't obvious and intuitive. It wasn't just plug it in to the wall and turn it on, you know, power from the wall and turn it on. You know, there was configuration to it. And the software that they wanted you to use configured it from the PC, and it every time you'd go to set up the second PC and it'd want to reconfigure that device, and it was just really awkward and not didn't really connect how I wanted it to connect. Once it was set up, it was fine, but I tend to want to go, whenever possible, to a hardwired
solution.
Ethernet.
Right. So, and let's talk about the advantages of that. The advantage of a hardwired is typically you plug and play. You plug it in. You don't have to worry about the security, because the security is the physical access to the wire. So your neighbors can't get on it unless they somehow break into your house and splice in something.
Right, and run a long wire across the yard.
So in much the same way as an old-fashioned phone system, landline system, you don't have to worry about security per se. So you just plug it in and go. The downside is you have to have wires run to the device where you need it in the house. And if you live in a house that's older, that doesn't have the wiring in place, then it could be a little tricky to get that wiring run to wherever you need it to go. So,
well, Paul, I ran some wires recently to the area behind my television set.
Yes. Yeah, you had some trouble there, and it wasn't even that far, like 10 feet or something.
It wasn't that far of a run, but there was a little, gave me some consternation. So, but I had to run three Ethernet cables back there because I had devices in my entertainment setup that didn't do Wi-Fi, for one, and even if they did, I wouldn't want them to. So my Blu-ray player, Ethernet connection on it. My satellite dish, Ethernet connection on it. Another device, which I'll let you talk about, Ethernet connection on it.
Has both.
My father just got a television set. It's got an Ethernet connection on it. So
you're seeing more and more, although it probably is wireless too, doesn't it?
The it television? Does not.
No, okay. No. So you are seeing more and more devices like TVs, home entertainment centers with the Ethernet connection. A big reason for that is your TV now comes with Amazon On Demand and Netflix, so that you can stream movies right to it. You can update the code on the TV if you need to. And so they're building in these Ethernet ports. They're so cheap. They're putting them in there with a small operating system, so you can update various features and get on the internet with the TV. So that's, you know, that's the advantage of having a wireless in place, or wired, excuse me. But even in the wired arena, there are some choices, and I'll talk about those right after this.
You are listening to the Handy Guys Podcast.
Okay, so in the wire, you know, if you want to put wired Ethernet, that's the cabling.
Yep.
It's four pairs of wires, and there are several different categories. The minimum is called Cat 5 or Category 5. So there's a Category 5, a Category 5E, and a Category 6. I think there may even be a Category 7, but no one uses it.
Well, there was a Category 3 as well, and there was also a Category 4.
But you can't use 3 or 4. Not an option for anything speedier than 10 megabit, I think. So Category 5 is going to be your minimum for any of your networking in today's universe. And Category 5 is probably enough for most home users, although if you can get Category 5E, do it. Category 6 is what I have in my home for the most part, and I wouldn't recommend it because it's harder to work with if you're going to be running your own wiring. If someone else is doing it for you or you have it in place, great, more power to you.
Sure.
So so those are the options there. And we can get into how you fish this stuff and connect it at a later date, but that's what you would put in. Now, why would you want physical wiring? Well, you just talked about it, Brian. All these new devices have Ethernet jacks, especially in the area of home consumer electronics and home entertainment. And so if you can get the category, the Ethernet cabling run to your TV where you have TVs, it makes a lot of sense because video is now being streamed across the internet and there's what is called IPTV. And so in my opinion, if I was building a house today or if I had the opportunity, I would make sure I had Ethernet run to every spot where you might have a TV. In addition, I'd run a cable as well, but it would be cheap to run both.
Right. But would you run one cable or would you run multiple? I mean, I know you can, we can talk about, you can put a hub or a switch in behind that TV.
I would run it, just make sure I had at least one in all the major areas. Unless I knew it was going to be like a computer and you might have a printer and a computer, I might run two. It is nicer to have the extra connection there because if you run a switch or a hub, then you have to power it and it just adds one additional layer of, a problem.
Right, of complexity.
Yeah. So here's the great advantage. I had already run wires to my one TV. I have one TV. I'm very simple in my house. One main major area. I am going to actually have a TV in my bedroom, and I want to run a wire to that as well, because I'm now watching most of my TV these days across the internet.
Most of your TV across the internet.
Yeah, most of my TV is now across the internet.
That's amazing.
And I was doing it with a laptop hooked up to my TV. We were watching movies, watching TV shows, but now we have a Roku box.
What's a Roku box?
Roku box is essentially a little computer with some flash disk on it, which is not a moving disk. It's a little hard drive to allow you to stream video. And the thing weighs maybe not much more than a couple decks of cards.
It's real small and lightweight.
Small, and it has an HDMI connector on it as well, some others, composite and so forth, to hook it up to a high-def TV or even a low-def TV. And it now allows me to watch TV over the internet, so I have to have that internet connection.
Right.
Now, it'll work with wireless, but I don't want to deal with the interference, with the security. The wireless is not as fast and is not as reliable as a wired connection.
But, Paul, some would argue that if you can get past the reliability, let's say you have a reliable wireless, even if it's the older 802.11b standard, which is 10 meg, that's still plenty fast because your internet connection, even if you have the fastest Fios, is going to be slower than 10 megs.
Not B. The B is typically six megabits, I think it is. It's the G that's much faster. So you need the 802.11g. In that case, you're right. It's typically, I think it's 54 megabits per second. It's faster than most of your internet connection. So you're right about that, Brian, but the reality is that's only if you're very close to where the router is.
Right.
And I've just experienced so many disconnect issues and problems with other noise on that spectrum, whether it be wireless handsets, microwaves, or whatever, it causes problems. If I can just plug in, I had the Roku device up and running literally in about 2 minutes. I was ready to go.
You don't have to pay a subscription fee for that.
The Roku box costs around $100, and there is no subscription fee. So if you already have a Netflix account, you can now stream not all of their movies, but their movies that are available for streaming. You can stream it to your Roku. You can also rent movies from Amazon On Demand. I think they have like 80,000 movies available. Then you can also watch other programs across the internet. For instance, Twit.tv has a lot of technology shows.
Sure.
You can watch those on the Roku box. There are several other consolidators, and they call them channels on the Roku, in which you can watch. And one of them is Blip TV.
Blip TV. Now, what do they do?
Well, Blip TV allows folks to, podcasters, for instance, to post episodes, episodic shows. So,
Paul, we're podcasters.
Yes, yeah, that's what we are. That's right. And we actually mentioned several weeks ago that we were recording for video, and we are continuing to do that. And at some point, we expect to be available, and we thought it would come sooner, but it's taken a little longer, but we want to do it right. We will be available on handyguys.tv and via blip.tv, and you will be able to watch us on your computer at any time of day or on a box like the Roku box.
That's right.
You can watch us also on other, you know, there's other boxes that are going to be coming out.
Right, all kinds
Roku,
of that. So,
Roku.
Or you'll be able to watch us on your Apple TV.
Absolutely, yes.
On your video iPods.
Yep.
On your iPhone.
Your Zune.
On your Zune. On your iTouch.
Yeah,
and even your iPad.
There you go. We expect to be available both as an audio podcast and a video podcast on pretty much every major device. And so Roku is just one of them. But that's why I wanted to talk a little bit about home networking. If you can get things wired, it just makes it so much easier as you start hooking up these sorts of devices. You know, I'm not joking. The Roku box, I highly recommend if you have a good internet connection at home, pretty fast.
Right. You can't work this over dial-up.
Yeah, not dial-up. And DSL might be questionable. I'm not sure. But if you have a good cable connection or a fiber connection, it is amazing. It's so easy to use. I don't watch that many movies, but even now, I've watched some more movies since I've got it. But the point is, it's so easy to do, and I actually can fit them in because I don't have to go to the store, find a disc. I can just bring it up, done, hit the button. It's kind of movies on demand, and I don't have to have an expensive cable plan or, you know, dish plan to do it.
Now, what, you know, when I watch a movie, like a rented movie, I want to, you know, I have high definition and a big screen and
right.
all that and the Blu-ray player. I want to watch it in 1080p.
Okay. Well, for
can
those.
Can I watch a Roku,
yeah.
a movie via Roku in 1080p?
Well, for the.
That's the highest
for
quality.
For those
HD.
Geeks out there that insist on 1080p, I think it's overhyped. But anyway, those that insist upon it, right now, most of the Roku stuff is in lower def or it's in at best 720p. But they've announced that. That 1080p is here coming, I think later this year. They're going to start making their streaming movies available. Obviously, the older ones, I don't think it would, they're not even in high def necessarily. But yes, that has been announced.
Okay.
I don't remember if that was an official announcement or just a rumor I heard that the 1080p is coming.
So well, it would only make sense that eventually everything will be
yeah.
At that highest quality.
But I have noticed, though, I mean, some of the movies I've watched both on Amazon In Demand and some of the newer ones on Netflix streamed have been fantastic. I haven't had any problems. You know, maybe I can count on one hand the times I've seen any of that pixelization where and it's lasted a split second and then everything is fine. I mean, it literally just... You haven't had any problems. The other thing is older TV shows. We don't have the Disney Channel. We had it for a while. We don't anymore because we're too cheap. We don't.
Right.
We want to pay the cable company. Well, a lot of the shows on there, like season 1, 2, 3, and 4 of X show, Hannah Montana, whatever it is that the kids like, you can pull up for free on Netflix.
Really?
So you can't get the most recent season.
You can
pull
up free on Netflix?
Yeah. Yeah. And also if you like some of these other shows like Lost and other, you know, you can't watch this season, but this season will be made available on Netflix next fall or whatever.
Really?
And then you can watch those. Huh. So we're finding that's what I mean. We're using it for what you consider regular TV shows. Now you can't watch, you know, American Idol and stuff like that, but they do have a lot. And you can't watch Hulu.com either. It's not available on it. But so we've been really impressed with it and the quality is fantastic. I mean, it's like why you know, once you start watching movies on that, you know, and it's so cheap and it's a one-time fee, right? You get it and you got the box.
I heard, this is probably pure speculation and rumor, that those boxes are going to be free.
No, I've heard the same thing and I think that we may have read the same thing. I wouldn't be surprised at that.
Because it's, you know, some of the content on that device is going to have advertising inserted into it.
Yeah.
And when we're on there, from time to time, we'll also have a little bit of advertising or product placements and things like that. We got to pay the bills and pay for the
I can see that
equipment.
Coming.
So,
but anyway, so if you're a handy guy, think about this in terms of your home and your networking. Don't just simply assume wireless, but look into how you can run Ethernet. Let us know if you have any questions about it. If you want to know how to connect Ethernet, we can talk about that in a future episode. But I'm sure there's probably a ton of videos out on YouTube on how to do it. But consider it. Consider fishing wire to these devices. You won't regret it once you get it set up.
All right.
All right. Well, that's all we have for this week's episode of the Handy Guys Technology, I mean, the Handy Guy Podcast.
Right.
And handyguys.tv.
Handy Guys. You know, you've given that web address out twice, Paul.
Yeah. It's in beta.
It's in beta.
Yeah, it's in beta. So handyguys.tv is where you can also check out our videos when they come out, but it's in beta now. There's not much there.
All right.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week on the Handy Guys Podcast.
Bye.
The Handy Guys will be back next week. Same handy time, same handy website.